Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you've listened for very long at all, we're going to spend the next 20 minutes or so visiting with the Dirt Doctor. Then we'll have about 30 minutes left in the show to take more phone calls. But right now, as always, is my pleasure to say good morning to Howard Garrett. I think Tater knows when Chris is calling. He seems to be in especially good voice when Chris is doing my engineering.
Yeah, you never know. They're wandering around the house and in and out, so sometimes they're near the phone, sometimes not. But yeah, he answered the phone this morning.
That's a good thing. Well, it was a bad week for Monsanto, so I guess it was a good week for gardeners.
Yeah, the only bad thing is if you have an investment portfolio and have any stock in there, most investors probably invested Bayer and Monsanto, and their stock took a big dive. But the it's good. We've got confirmation on at least one case. There's two more coming up right away, and then there's about 11 more. I've gotten conflicting reports about it. Doug was telling me yesterday that he thought that the third judge in the third case was going to allow a whole bunch more testimony and evidence and stuff, and then I had an attorney tell me a couple days ago that there's one judge that's more or less in charge of all of these lawsuits. They've
really
put them all together. I'm not sure about what the current status is.
Yeah, I understand there are like 10,000 lawsuits pending, and who knows how many years it'll take to work its way through court. But yeah, I heard that their stock dropped 13% this week, but its Bayer stock is down 40% since they acquired Monsanto. And all I can say is it couldn't happen to a more deserving company, is with all the cover-ups and all the things that they've done to mislead us, I believe, at least on a lot of this stuff. So I'm not sad for them, and I know a lot of people that have mutual funds may not even realize it's in there, but I don't know. People just need to ask.
Another rumor that I heard, and there may be something to it, is that Bayer is considering bailing out and getting out of the ownership of Monsanto. Who knows whether that's true or not.
I don't know. But on to more positive things. What's going on in your gardening world this week?
Well, everything's growing like crazy. Tater's eager to go out here. He wants to bark at the neighbor's dogs, I guess. I've continued to be kind of impressed about how well everything held up through the 20-degree weather. There's a little bit of cosmetic damage, but very, very little, and now everything's just growing like crazy. It's even a little hard to keep up with the watering, and in some cases it's getting so warm here in the afternoon that I assume it's pretty much the same thing down there.
We're seeing some sunshine for the first time. We've been the past 2.5 months. We've hardly had a week of sunshine, but this week has been beautiful. A little cloudy today, but we are dry. I know y'all have had a couple of rains that we missed, but golly, the soil is just cracked. And For an El Nino year, it sure hadn't panned out as far as having much moisture. And people do need to do some good thorough soaking as far as watering. Don't think they need to water as often, but we're having to get back into irrigation down here.
Yeah, it's that time. I heard you talking about caladiums. I don't know if I'm going to get into that this year or not. I used to do a lot of white caladiums all around the place, and having a shady garden, it really worked nicely. Mm-hmm. It just added a brightness to the garden that was terrific.
Well, if you do,
yeah, I may do it. I haven't done it the last couple of years. I've just been busy doing other things. I hire somebody to come in and do it. It's just a matter of me pulling the trigger to do it. But
well, two things about caladiums. There's a new one out called Moonlight that is just almost a pure white, that is just a gorgeous one. And the old Candidum that has been around for about 50 years, through some tissue culture, they cleaned it up, and it is a lot whiter than it used to be. I don't know if you've noticed, but 5 or 6 years ago, it got to be where the white caladiums were almost as green as they were white. But they've really cleaned it up through tissue culture. So if this is a year you decide to plant white caladiums, I think you'll be pleased.
Okay, good. One of the things that people foul up on caladiums is fertilizing them a little too much, and I think that's one way you can encourage that green to be more, is by fertilizing too much. They tend to stay a more pure white, at least the ones in the past, you know, if they were a little bit on the hungry side.
That's probably very true. I think it's true of all the different colors, not just the whites, but of course the green shows up so much. But I have to say it's sure less of a problem with organic fertilizers than it is with all that Miracle-Gro and that other stuff that we don't like to talk about.
Sure.
Had an interesting caller this morning, and it's something that I think we all need to keep in mind. But this lady has apparently a real sensitivity to milkweeds, at least to the alkaloid that's in there. And she apparently rubbed her eye, or at least rubbed one eye, when she was propagating one of the milkweeds that the butterflies like so much, and actually went blind in that eye for several days. She said, in looking it up, she said it's mentioned a number of places how caustic it is, and she's found one reference, and she's apparently not the only one. She said she's recovered since that time most of the sight in that eye, but I think it's something that we probably need to remember to mention when we're talking about it. And she was saying that even dirtdoctor.com, which apparently is her go-to source, she said he didn't mention anything about that. You might tell Howard, you might want to mention that any of these milkweeds that have some of the alkaloids in there, people want to be careful about washing their hands and not rubbing sensitive tissues after they've handled them. And she said it was for her, since she was actually cutting it to make cuttings, that she probably got a lot more of the sap than somebody just casually handling it would.
Yeah, I've heard about some of the euphorbias having that problem, but I didn't realize milkweed specifically was that bad. That's a good tip. Need to add that to the information.
Well, and you know, it's again, different people have different sensitivities, and a lot of people don't know they're allergic to something until they have a bad reaction. And if it's got a white sap, I just kind of tend to be a little bit more careful with it.
Yeah, I think that's a good tip. Absolutely. Well, I'm about to hit the road again today to talk people over Mount Pleasant. So if any of your listeners are in that part of the world or care to drive over there, it's kind of a surprise that we got invited in the first place last year. It's a Master Gardener deal.
Right.
And the keynote speaker, I'm going to do the Fantastic Trees talk, and look forward to it. It was really a very nice show last year. They had a tremendous number of plants for sale, and some unusual things. I was quite pleased.
Well, that sounds like fun. How'd your talk up? Was it Denton last week?
Yeah, the D&L Farm and Home Store, really a good event. Had a nice turnout. Sold a little bit of art. We're really having fun with the art, and it's not, you know, overwhelming or anything. But I'm delighted that people like it enough to invest a little in Torque and have a Howard Garrett original. I still haven't set up a situation where I can do prints. We're only selling originals, but we're going to have a few pieces at this event. I'm going to take a few more in my car, but Doug's not coming, so I'm not going to have a whole lot of stuff.
You're not quite as laid down. Well, that's great. But and even though this is a Master Gardeners event, public is welcome up there.
Yeah, it cost a whopping $3 to get in, I think. So, bring your wallet. It'll wipe you out to get in.
No, it just means more money left over to buy some Howard Garrett art.
Yeah, and plants. They had some native things that you just don't run into too much in the nurseries. And had fun there last year. A lot of booths, a lot of exhibits, and some cool people. There There was even one company that had a new line of coffee. So, there's all kinds of stuff there.
Wow. Elijah,
are y'all supposed to get some rain today?
Every time they revise the forecast, they move the chances down. I was looking at the radar over one of the newscasts, and it doesn't look very likely. And they're saying even if it does, that it will be very, very light rain. So it's looks like just another beautiful day. We've had the prettiest week we've had so far in 2019, and it's overcast today, but I think our chances of rain are pretty minimal, and if we get anything, they're saying like less than a tenth of an inch. So we'll see. We'll see.
I think we've got a little better chance than that. So yeah, see what happens.
Well, we sure do. We sure do need the rain. How are your East Texas Buckeyes that you shared some of the seed with me? How are yours doing?
They're doing fine. I have moved them out. They were starting to lean pretty badly in the greenhouse. You know, I don't have much direct sun for very long getting in that greenhouse. So they were getting a little leggy. Bright big leaves that may have something to do with the light also, but I've moved them out. But I sure learned something new with them, and that is those big old buckeyes do not like being planted like you can get away with planting an acorn, you know,
sure.
That countersinking thing. You've got to get them down in the ground. The ones that I had up high dried up and did not germinate. They died.
Mm-hmm. Well, so. two out of the four that you sent me germinated well and grew. The one of them just all of a sudden turned around and decided to drop its leaves, and since that time it's come back out with prettier foliage than it had to begin with. I've got to get mine out of the greenhouse. They're in the greenhouse too. But two out of the four did quite well, but I found exactly the same thing with planting on them, and I just wondered what your experience had been comparing to my native buckeyes that, of course, just cover one hillside down here. These do have much larger foliage, but I'm not sure whether it's just because they're in better soil and they've got a little fertilizer along with it. So they'll be getting planted out in the garden pretty soon, and we'll sure be interested to watch and see how they do in our hill country soil.
Yeah, we need to continue to compare notes, because no telling what the flowers are like. The lady where we got the seed, and for people that haven't heard this, it was the owner of the state champion ginkgo tree that gave me the seed over in East Texas, far East Texas, New Boston. And she said that hers is bright red, great big bright red flowers.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting to see what ours do. There can, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if ours aren't completely different as far as the flowers go. Being in instead of sandy acid soil, being mm-hmm. in our alkaline situations, we'll just have to wait and see what happens and pass the information on and photographs on to everybody.
Well, we'll look forward to it, and it's so much fun trying things, and some of them work and some of them don't, and it's interesting, the same plants, a difference in the color of the flowers and how much that soil acidity and all can impact that. I'd be interested to see how they grow. Ours vary from really a fairly light pink to almost to some greenish tone. So it sounds like this one may be very different. I'll sure look forward to seeing. I guess probably be a year or two before mine will be big enough, or yours big enough they may have any flowers on them this year. You think that's a year away?
No, I don't think so. They're only about 15 inches tall, if that.
Okay, yeah.
I think it'll be at least next year. We'll just have to wait and see. There's a tremendous variety in the size and the color and the and when and the timing on the bloom of my other buckeyes. It ranges all over the place. I've got some that are fully leafed out right now, and I've got some that the buds are just barely broken. The scarlet ones are already in bloom in the front yard, so it's just, you know, across the board. Of course,
yeah.
I've got Ohio buckeye and the Texas native one and all kinds of them.
Well, there are actually a couple of different genera that we call buckeye, and the one down here that I think is one of the hardiest plants that I wish were more widely used is that Mexican buckeye, the Ugnadia, that has a pretty pink flowers, and it makes a big shrub. I have them growing around the ranch that are probably 10, 12 feet tall. I saw one here in town about 10 feet tall. Just absolutely solid mass pink flowers. When I first looked at it, I thought it was a peach tree, but looked a little bit more carefully, and they're a little bit brighter pink. But that thing was heavily, heavily flowered this year. Apparently, our rainier early fall and then the cooler, cloudier weather has really been to its liking.
I love that plant. We have some small ones in containers in the backyard, and I've got a pretty big one near the front door. So it's really versatile too. Sun or shade, doesn't mind containers. It's really good.
I'm going to try to collect a bunch of seed this year, and we'll get it for Torque and to go out with some of the other seeds. I just didn't get to it fast enough last fall, and I didn't realize how many apparently critters feed on that, because I went looking for seed with the intent to collect and found that so many of the pods, seed had just flat disappeared out of. We'll try to do better on that this year. Well, anything?
Well, let's see. What else am I going to be doing soon? I've got a little bare soil. I got behind on my vegetable garden at the office, and had some guys come in and help me get it all de-weeded, the rescue grass and the that Velcro weed, whatever the official name of it is, were the ones that had really taken over the most. But
yeah.
I'm ready to get a whole bunch of new stuff planted and try to divide my time reasonably between my art and my garden. I'm definitely an ADD artist. I just, I can't wait to start another one, and I'll get one started and start two or three others and go back and forth between the several while I'm finishing the first one.
Well, it just shows that you have a multi-track mind to be able to focus on more than one thing. My vegetable gardening has suffered because I put so much energy into getting my new greenhouse built, and
yeah,
I have
yeah.
to say the orchids are sure loving that. We've got a great orchid show going on down here this weekend. Roberta and I ran by when we went to lunch yesterday. They were getting it all set up, so looking forward to having a lot of folks go down there and enjoy that. And golly, there's so much going on in the world of gardening right now. It's a fun time of year, and just a lot of good things happening. I don't know how many greenhouse gardeners you know, and obviously your greenhouse is in a pretty shady area, but I'm impressed with this new shade cloth that I put on my greenhouse. It's called Aluminet, A-L-U-M-I-N-E-T, and its claim to fame, in addition to offering, and you can get it in different densities, but it reflects so much of the heat away. They say on average that your greenhouse will run 10 to 15 degrees cooler using this for a shade cloth. And and with mine, on some of the really sunny days, when with standard shade cloth, that greenhouse just shoots up in temperature, but it stayed very moderate, even in bright sun with higher temperatures. So far, I'm really impressed with it, and I'd sure look at it if anybody's thinking about buying shade cloth.
Yeah, I'll make a note of that and get that added to the information on the website, too. That sounds great. Have you ever played with the colors, the different colors, and what effect they have?
About the only colors I've seen three colors, white, green, and black. Have you seen more than that?
Well, I was just thinking about colors in general. I played around a little bit some years ago, and I never got it completed because my greenhouse is too shady to really get the test results. But this idea of having a, not necessarily the shade cloth, but the plastic or whatever greenhouse is made out of being in the pink colors.
Right.
And then, of course, there's pretty good research out there already about the different colors of mulches and having various effects on plants. And I think that's something maybe when we both have time we need to look into a little bit more. I think there's definitely something to having this pink, looking at the world through rose-colored glasses, kind of a color that the light comes through to get to plants and even animals that are in aquariums and cages and things like that. I've seen some remarkable apparent results that have happened with just using that color.
That's interesting, and I'm only laughing because the idea of having time to look at new fun things. And if we could just get about another 6 hours in every day, we might get a fraction of these things that we want to experiment with done. And they're using, you know, some light therapies and things that I just find fascinating that I really haven't looked into carefully enough. But I'm not sure how you think actually getting a more of a colored film material or something like that we might try growing under. How would you approach this?
Yeah, I actually got a sample of it at one time, and I don't know what I even did with it. It was a guess, but when I started asking people about it, there was a little bit of an understanding about it. There is a very interesting place over town is, you know, I'm drawing a blank right now. It's where the dinosaur track.
Oh yeah, Glenrose.
In Glenrose, there is the Creation Museum there, and it's a guy that's very interesting to say the least, and he's set up in his little museum. Or at least when I was there, was basically a double wide, and he was in the process of building a big building. To make this a larger thing, but so people could actually experience this color. But he had that color used on aquariums with snakes and fish and various kinds of things. And there was no question about the fact that the fish were, he had piranha and some other species, and they were definitely bigger than they would have been, you know, if they hadn't been behind that color. He claimed, and I didn't test it out, that the snakes were no longer poisonous as a result. So, anyway, there's some interesting information and research to some degree that already exists with that. It'd be fun to play around with it a little bit more.
Sounds like something to explore. Well, listen, I don't want to keep you because I know you need to get on the road. But as always, thanks for taking the time this morning. And we'll look forward to doing it again next week. And light, yeah, there's a lot to talk about there. A lot of different therapies used for people as well. But just one more fun project. Well, listen, so it's Mount Pleasant. And if anybody is listening up in that area, how will they find you?
Well, it's the Cypress Basin Master Gardeners down. If they go to Dirt Doctor and go to appearances, all the information's there. Or they can just pull up Cypress Basin Garden Show. Enjoyed being with you, as always, and we'll see you guys next week and give you a report.
Look forward to it, Howard. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye. All right, DirtDoctor.com, Howard's website, is, golly, just the source for good information that applies to our area. Now, again, I realize lots of folks listening all around, but organic gardening techniques are pretty much the same wherever you are. But when it comes to specific plants and things like that, I think you'll find the information on DirtDoctor.com to be just almost 100% as accurate here in San Antonio as it is up in the Metroplex where Howard resides. But great guy. The Dirt Doctor got some great books out there, some books he co-authored with Malcolm Beck, just a wealth of information. So I hope you take advantage of DirtDoctor.com, and there's some fun things out there. We're going to talk to Scott, Kenneth, Paul, and Jeff. So let's get started with Scott. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Morning. Love your show. I've been, I look forward to it every weekend.
Well, very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. My front yard, it's pretty big. It's theoretically, it's supposed to be Bermuda, but the weeds overran it, mostly crabgrass.
Yeah.
So I'm about halfway through putting down a layer of compost, and I'm going to keep it mowed. My question for you is, there are areas in it that are were already pretty sparse with the Bermuda, because it's that light beigey sandy clay that's as hard as a rock.
Okay.
Can I, while I'm doing all this other, can I throw some Bermuda seed out there to try to get it going in those naked areas?
Until it gets really hot, you'll be wasting your time. Bermuda seed simply doesn't germinate until we're up to those, you know, consistently 80 degrees or above. And there are a lot of people out there that are not in a rush for that to happen. So I'm going to tell you probably May before I'm going to be talking about throwing out Bermuda seed. But the compost over that area will definitely help. You may be surprised if we do, and they're still giving us pretty good chance of being rainier later this spring. I think you're going to be amazed at how that Bermuda will grow, how it will spread. It's just been so cool. My Bermuda is, I'm seeing very little green, and I know it's good and healthy because I'm digging some of it out of the garden and some other places, but it's just the nights have stayed cool enough. Bermuda hadn't started growing. So at this point, the only thing I'd add to your program is good organic fertilizer. And then when May rolls around, we'll see if you need to put some seed out. But I think you'd be amazed at how the Bermuda will spread into that.
All right, sir. And the organic fertilizer, just like spread it just like any other time, nothing special because of the compost being there?
No, absolutely nothing special. I actually like it. Given the choice, I put the fertilizer down first and the compost on top of it, but that's not mandatory, and it does not have to be watered in. There are lots of good brands out there. A 40-pound bag typically will cover about 4,000 to 5,000 square feet, but the compost alone does not have enough nutrient in it, so I would get some fertilizer out. But it sounds to me like you're doing everything else right. As soon as it warms up, the weeds are going to start disappearing, and the Bermuda is just going to come out and take over.
Any pre-emergent I need to do?
No, it's way too late. Pre-emergence, as the name implies, are things before they germinate, and most all our spring weeds have already germinated. Your compost, the humic acids in there do a lot of pre-emergent seed control or seedling control as well. I think that's the last thing you need to worry about adding any of.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure. Have a great weekend. Thanks, Scott. Bye. All right. Kenneth is up next. Good morning, Kenneth.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
It's just going to be a beautiful day out there. Looking forward to a great day in the nursery business.
I hope it will be, if I can get away from work. Hey, listen, I got a question about some fertilizer.
Yes, sir.
I live in Wimberley, and most of it's just more or less native grass, but I wanted to put something else down if I could. And the thing was, my daddy used to use a fertilizer 13-13-13. The 313s.
Right.
And just out of curiosity, he never used anything else. Is that a pretty good fertilizer? Or
well, it's not what I would choose. Your old 13-13 is, once again, the nutrient that's in that is in what we call the anion form. It doesn't bind to our soils. And of the 13% nitrogen, your plants normally get about 10% of that, about 1.3%.
Okay.
If you get a good organic, whether it's Medina or Maestro Grow or, you know, Nature's Creation, there are a lot of good organic brands. The nitrogen's actually in a different form, what we call a cation that binds the soil. So even though the numbers are much lower, your plants actually get more from it. If that Medina fertilizer says 4% nitrogen, your plants are getting all 4%. So that's what I would encourage you to go with rather than the 13-13. That was the standard for a lot of years, but that's before we learned how those things burn the organic material out of the soil. You go with the organics.
It was just something he always used. My brother asked me that question, and I said I couldn't answer because I didn't ask him. He's gone now. I've been gone for 3 years. But anyway, that's what I was wondering. I just trying to figure out what I could put out there because it's not real a lot of grass. There is some little San Augustine here and there, but most of it's just kind of native, and I may throw out some Bermuda seeds or something.
Well, again,
I already heard you talk about with that other gentleman, so. Anyway, okay, well, that's what I really wanted to talk to you about.
Well, and
the other good thing goes good.
Well,
sorry.
I hope your says too. The other good thing about the organics rather than the 13-13 is they don't have to be watered in. That old 13-13, you had to water them immediately, but Nature's Creation, Medina, throw them out and let Mother Nature take care of it from there.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I needed. Thank you, sir. I sure appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Kenneth. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Good morning, Paul.
Yes. Hi. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you. Bob, a couple of questions on compost. Is it too late to put it out?
No. We go by temperature And I'm not seeing anything in the next couple of weeks that would make me hesitate to put out compost. I'm not worried about putting out compost till we start hitting in the 90s and things. And it looks like we're coming up to a stretch of absolutely perfect weather for gardening, including putting out compost.
All right, very good. Now, on mulch, is there a I want to use that colored mulch, you know, that red colored mulch. Is there something about that mulch that I should stay away from or be aware of?
Well, it's got some dyes in it that are not the best thing in the world. I wouldn't use it around where you have kids or pets playing, and I wouldn't be using it in my vegetable garden. But if you like the red color, I know a lot of people do, but it's basically just dyed, and some of those dyes are things that I just am not real crazy about, but I don't think there's anything that's just not as bad as a lot of the weed killers and things like that. It's just it's just something I wouldn't want to be rolling around in it, I'll put it that way.
Okay. If I was going to put it around a live oak, not up against the trunk of the tree necessarily, but just, you know, around the live oak and surrounding it with flowers on the perimeters, would something like that be okay, do you think, for a live oak?
It's not going to bother the tree at all. You're exactly right in keeping it away from the trunk, and I trust the root flares exposed. But mulches, they do a lot of things to suppress weeds. They help conserve moisture. They keep the soil cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter. So your live oak's going to love having some mulch around it. Just don't put any weed block or anything like that underneath it. Just your mulch alone on the surface is your tree's going to be very happy with that. If you're planting flowers, don't mound it up too heavily around your annuals because it can hold so much moisture, like begonias and things like that. If you're not real careful, you'll end up with a little more rotting problem with those things. So be careful using too much of it with your flowers. But your tree itself, it'll be very happy having it over a portion of the root zone.
Oh, I see. And the type of flowers that I could put out right now, obviously, if they're annuals, they're not going to last forever, but something that would give me a lot of color, say, for the next month or two.
For sun or shade?
Of sun.
Okay. For the sun, you can plant petunias, and you don't have to worry if it cools off again. Petunias are going to go beautifully up until the weather gets just super hot. A lot of people are planting, and I think it's okay to plant now, marigolds. You can plant some of your little zinnias. You can plant dianthus is another absolutely gorgeous flower that it won't be bothered if it does cool off again. Now, it's too early for periwinkles. Don't let anybody talk you into planting vinca or periwinkles, but petunias are outstanding. If you're looking for something that's going to add some contrasting color and things, if you're looking for colorful foliages along with your flowers, Dusty Miller is a very good little upright plant. You're three or four different colors of what they call potato vine. Man, those things grow just unbelievably so, and I think you're fine to put them out. But those are all good things for sun.
Okay. And I guess I need a couple maybe for shade.
For shade, your best two flowers are going to be impatiens and begonias. Now, other colorful things that you can put in the shade, coleus is a beautiful plant that's grown for the colors that it has in its leaves. That potato vine will do fine in shady areas as well. Probably within the next week or two, you're going to start seeing caladium plants available at the nurseries. Now, it's still way too early to plant caladium bulbs, but if the bulbs are already up and growing, you can set out caladiums in the shade. There is a beautiful plant. The leaves are almost iridescent on it. It's they call it Persian Shield. Strobilanthus is its botanical name, but it's another really beautiful foliage. And you combine that with something like pink impatiens or lavender impatiens or some of the begonias, it just makes a very, very striking show in the shade.
Bob, thank you very much. I appreciate you and the show.
Well, I appreciate your call this morning. If you're ever over our way, stop by. We've got lists of these plants for both sun and shade, and you don't have to try to write them all down quite as quickly. Stop by, and I'll be happy to give you a copy of that.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
There all the time.
Thank you, sir. Bye. Okay, I think we'll probably finish up calls with Jeff. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. Actually, Paul answered, or you answered one of my questions, because I was asking about the dyed mulch, or
yeah.
Should I just go with like a cedar?
If you don't have particular, it sounded like he was set on having that color, but unless you're just trying to get color, good old cedar mulch is just almost impossible to beat. And
because I got a big yard, it's an acre and a quarter, but around the trees, I want to go like 12 feet out from the trunk.
That would be about right. Stay about 6 inches away from the trunk and then go out another 10 or 12 feet. That covers, even though the tree's root system goes a lot further than that, that covers the portion of the root system that is actively taking up water and other things. So that would be a perfect plan.
Yeah, because I'm not looking at doing a lot of, flowers and all that stuff, just kind of cut down on the grass area. But mm-hmm. I didn't know if because I see places that got, like, stone.
Right.
All around.
Well, that's strictly a matter of personal taste. The thing that I don't like is so often when people are putting down the stone, they're putting the stuff they call weed block underneath it, which is a misnomer because it doesn't really stop the weeds, and it really messes up the soil. It cuts off oxygen penetration and holds too much moisture underneath it, so it's strictly what you like. If you want to go with a stone area, I guess the nicest thing is you don't have to water it, but you still will have to weed it periodically, and it just goes for the look that you are looking for. I like color. I like, I'm with you. Cut back on the grass and increase the colorful areas you have with perennials as well as with annuals. And on the mulch, I just don't think you do better than cedar mulch. And where are you located? Are you here in
Atkins? I'm in Atkins. Real okay. Sandy soil.
Yeah. The cedar mulch will be fine. I was going to say up in the hill country, Comal County and Kendall County basically give it away. All you're doing is paying a little bit of a loading charge for it. You may have to look around a little bit further down there around Atkins, but cedar mulch is fine. But on the other hand, if you know any tree trimmers or anybody like that, these guys who have got all the chips to dump, even that material makes a perfectly acceptable mulch.
Yeah, there's actually a plant up there by Segovia, and I got mm-hmm. property up there, and I found out that's where one of the local places get their cedar mulch from.
Oh, okay. Well,
so I might, just while I'm up there visiting the land, load my trailer up.
That'd be a perfect plan. That'd be a wonderful plan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The next quick question is, I have a friend that raises longhorns,
mm-hmm.
and he's got probably, I don't know, 30 yards by 20 yards by about, I don't know, 10 foot high of manure.
Okay.
That's been sitting there for a while. I was thinking of bringing it and dumping it on my thing and then tilling that manure into the sand.
Well, do you know, does he feed hay, or are these longhorns mainly just grass fed?
He probably feeds hay. Okay. I would assume also.
You've got to be really, really careful, because I would say the majority of the hay growers out there, they spray a really nasty product called Picloram on their hay because it kills everything except the grass. And it's pretty good at weed killing. But the problem with Picloram, it goes right through the cow or horse, comes out in the manure, and then everywhere you put the manure, it kills everything except the grass. And there have been people just totally destroy flower gardens and vegetable gardens buying or, acquiring compost made with these manures. So you need to find out if he's feeding hay. If he's feeding hay, is he feeding his own hay or is he buying hay? If he's buying hay, I'd be real suspicious of it. Now, one way that you can test, you can get a good cross-section to that manure, fill like a 5-gallon ranch bucket with it, fill it with water, and let it stand for about 24 hours, and then go pour that water around. Pour it over, things like broadleaf weeds of any sort. If the weeds don't show any burning around the edges, if they don't show any damage, then chances are there's not much herbicide in the manure. But if it starts making the weeds look bad, I sure wouldn't put that manure anywhere around my property. Picloram is just a real nasty chemical that just doesn't go away.
Ooh, okay.
So be real All careful right. about house and cow manure.
Okay, and the last one. We got some African violets.
Uh-huh.
It's growing, like, bigger than the section that we wanted it to grow in.
Okay.
Now, can I take, like, a spade and knock off one of the, like, it looks like it kind of grows in, like, little clumps kind of thing?
Yeah, you're probably actually looking at wood violets. You can divide them. You're going to set back your flowering. I probably would wait till a little later in the summer to do it. Enjoy your spring flowers, and then you can divide them up and move them around if you like.